Wednesday, October 4th, 2006. We're in the Howard T. Markey National Courts Building at 717 Madison Place Northwest, Washington, D.C. We're preparing to have oral arguments this morning at 10 o'clock in both courtrooms, 201 and 203. Anything else that you would like me to do?
Pleased to welcome a visiting judge, the Honorable Patty B. Saris from the United States District Court of the District of Massachusetts. Judge Saris is an experienced district judge who has taken an interest in our court's work, and we were delighted when she accepted our invitation to sit with us. And we look forward to sitting with her not only today and tomorrow, but in the future as often as she's willing to volunteer. The calendar today has four argued cases. For the benefit of counsel, I assure you that we have read your briefs and we have an understanding of the arguments, and you shouldn't waste your time on recitations of the facts or the procedural background of the case. Get right to the arguments that you want to impress upon us today. Very well, with that said, we'll have argument first in number 05-1434, Anderson against Fiber Composites. And first up then is Mr. Schutz.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, with me are Mr. Oakland and Becky Dorsey on the briefs. Fiber Composites and Anderson do agree about one thing, and that's that the district court got the claim construction half right. And I'd like to talk about the half that the district court got right. And that's on what have been referred to in the papers as the Group 2 patents or the structural member patents. And if you just go through a standard analysis, you're going to come out exactly correct, exactly where the district court did. There's nothing complicated about the claims of the Group 2 patents, the structural member patents. Claim 1 of the 027 patent, as an example, says that it covers a wood thermoplastic polymer composite structural member. It has certain characteristics of that that are recited in the claim. And if you then move next from the plain language of the claim, look at the specification, it's very clear that right at the beginning it says the invention relates to an improved structural member. And in fact, structural member is even defined in column 3 of the 027 patent, which you can find in the appendix at page 135. It gives a meaning. It says the term structural member, for purposes of this application, means a linear member with a regular cross-section or complex cross-section. Again, there's nothing particularly surprising about what the district court did in this case. The district court came to the right conclusion in Fiber Composites, however, would ask this court to impose what in essence would be a process limitation or a form limitation and say that it's limited to a pellet or a process to make a pellet.
Let me ask you about the prosecution history. I assume you were going to get there next, but let's jump directly to it. And in particular, the remarks regarding the Miani composite at A4116 to 4117. You're familiar with that passage.
I am.
And in particular, the language in contrast, and this is in contrast to statements made about Miani, the presently claimed composite is prepared by mixing the melted polymer and wood pulp, forming pelletized material, cooled and then extruded. This is to distinguish from Miani, in which the statement was made at 4117 that the composite is directly extruded and kept hot during the entire operation. Why isn't that a disclaimer?
I'm glad you asked that, Judge. And to begin with, we need to go back two pages, and we need to go to the appendix at page 4115. And keep in mind that this was the first response to the first office action on the parent application. And the applicant was confronted with rejections over several pieces of art, including Miani.
Mm-hmm.
And the applicant said, and this is at the bottom of A4115, I quote, "Applicants respectfully disagree and have indicated in the specification that prior to the present invention, previous polyvinyl thermoplastic materials combined with wood products have not resulted in a sufficient Young's modulus as claimed in the composite herein, some sites. This is made clearer by applicants' claims now amended, which point to an important element of the present invention, which is the size of the wood fiber used in the composite having such a large modulus. So we have that language. Then there's some discussion that's not particularly relevant. And then we have the statement that, that you referred to, Judge Bryson, about the extrusion process. But you then need to go on and look at what, in fact, the amended claims were, and they added a aspect ratio limitation to the claim. So the whole tenor here is this invention has to deal with certain characteristics not otherwise found in the prior art. And it really has nothing to do with how you get there. So if we step back and we look at the claim language again, and it talks about a composite structural member.
But when you say it doesn't have anything to do with how you get there, it seems to me that the language I just read says exactly the opposite of that and says that it has everything to do with how you get there. At least the distinction from Miani has everything to do with how you get there. I mean, it certainly is the case that you could have a composition claim, which you could say is ought to be construed to be limited to compositions which are made in a certain way. I mean, that would be a disclaimer of compositions made in any other way. I think you'd agree with that.
If we look at the law of this court on disclaimer, disclaimer has to be clear and unambiguous. Okay. And if we look at the Phillips case, which says, you know, look at the plain language and the spec, and then you have to look with a little bit of a, with a grain of salt, so to speak, on the prosecution history. And this is the only statement in the prosecution history of the 027 and 553 patent, even though there were a couple of continuation applications and a lot of other prosecution history. This is all they can point to. It's not a clear disclaimer. And what's really important here is what comes out of the extruder.
But if you put that together with the specification, the number of statements saying the invention is and refers to the pellet or the linear extruder, I mean, isn't... If you put the whole picture together, both the specification and the prosecution history, doesn't it look like a disclaimer?
If you look at the difference between the Group 1 patents...
I'm referring to Group 1. Yes.
Okay. And of course, we were talking about Group 2.
Let me see if I understand it, because I had the same question.
Yes.
You started off, I think, saying you were going to go directly to Group 2.
Yes.
So you're skipping over for now Group 1. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, because I interpreted your...
Miani is Group 2, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we're for now we're not getting into the Group 1 patents and the disclaimer issue with that. We're talking
Group
okay.
2. Still we're talking
Thanks.
What I call structural member.
I was a little embarrassed. I understand now.
But in response to Judge Saris's question, I wanted to just contrast the difference in the specification, because there are some substantial differences in the specifications between the composition patents and the structural member patents. If you look again at the spec of the structural member patents, it's very clear that we're covering the structural member. That we're covering the end product that comes out of the extruder. It says right in the beginning, there's really no claim here that we're covering some intermediate or that some process comes into play here, because it's clearly covering the end product, in my view, and I think the specification is very clear here. I'll have to concede that there are, when you're looking at the Group 2 patents, there are some different issues with respect to the specification.
Now you mean Group 1.
You mean Group 1.
I'm sorry, Group 1.
I jumped too quickly to Group 1, but that's where you seem to have such a problem.
Well, I'm more than happy to go there now if I've satisfied everybody's...
Before you get there, could you tell me, just as a practical matter, why does the Group 1... You start your appeal with Group 1. Why does it matter in terms of just... on the street consequences? Is it because you want to get it back into the willfulness, or is there a collateral estoppel issue lurking here? Or because it looks to me like you're not apt to get any more money out of the case, at least on the straight infringement, because these groups of patents seem to be coterminous in their scope. Is that
that's an excellent question, Your Honor. On the street, in the competitive environment, we would like those patents that to cover what fiber composites did and what others may be thinking about doing. We would like the ammunition in a highly competitive environment of having six patents instead of two.
But is that just because there's different coverage, or simply because six of anything is better than two of anything unless all of them are bad?
Well, at some level in the environment in which all our clients operate, six is better than two.
Okay, so that's what we're here laboring over is the proposition that six is better
than
two.
Well, I think we're laboring over several things, Your Honor. Primarily, and that's why I led the argument off, the group two patents, the structural member patents, the court got it right, and they're infringed. What's interesting, though, about the group one patents and the court's claim construction there is the denial of summary judgment on their use, fiber composites use, of an intermediate. If you go back and you look at the court's claim construction and the summary judgment proceedings, the court basically said, look, the composite composition claim, because of things that Judge Sarris pointed out, it covers a pellet or a linear extrude, basically an intermediate, not the final product. And the court held the group two patents clearly cover a final product, doesn't matter about the intermediate, which is correct. However, and this is why we ask you, in essence, even if you adopt the district court's claim construction on the group one patents, to send it back on the issue that summary judgment was entered against us on what's called the repro, because what they do, as you know from looking at the materials, is they have rejected railing parts that are extruded, and then they chop them up, and they then feed them back into an extruder. So they, in fact, are, it's not just powder and wood fiber that they put in an extruder. They put powder and wood fiber, and then they also toss in this, what I'll call, appropriately, an intermediate product. And even their experts admitted that it's a linear extrude. So if you take the claim construction of the group one patents, why isn't, and I'm pointing opposite page 43, and the court has seen this is the chopped up repro that the court held did not infringe as a matter of summary judgment.
Is that a blow up photograph, by the way? Or
I believe it's in Fiber Composites' brief, and
I thought there was a copy in both briefs.
I don't.
Well, maybe
think
there
we
is,
do. Yeah. In,
okay.
In our brief. We may have it in the appendix, but I'm not sure if it's a blow up. I don't know.
One of the responses was that you didn't put in a case that each one that those little what would you call them, the repro products,
mm-hmm,
met all the limitations of the claim.
Well, that's not right. If you look at the report of our expert Robert Lupinen, and we cite at the appendix, and I'll get that for you in a second. In the appendix at pages A1140 through 73, we have not all, but a good part of his expert report. And he opines that the repo, in fact, infringes. And here's his analysis summed up in a nutshell, which is, you have a product that comes out of the extruder that's defective for some, maybe warped or something like that. That product has been, samples of that type of product have been tested and meet the claim limitations. It's chopped up and it's fed back into the extruder. So it, in fact, through what is, you know, very easy circumstantial evidence, in fact, infringes. But the court held that we didn't even get to present that.
Your yellow light is on, however. I expect that given the complexity of this case and the number of issues that we'll go over, so I don't think you should worry unduly or rush yourself as you go into the other issues that you'd like to address. At some point we will have to move on, but we would like to give you an opportunity and Mr. Skinny an equal opportunity to address some of the issues beyond this. But having said that, let me bring you back one more time, if I could, to Miani, because this was something that looked conspicuous.
Before you do that,
I'm sorry,
could I just stay on the point that he had
of
before
course.
You switch?
Sure.
Just on the point that you made, just to go back to Judge Bryson's earlier question about what the real dispute is here and what the ramifications are of what we do. Even if we agreed with you on the repro, on the issue you were just talking about, does that have any consequence in terms of additional money? We're still left, are we not, with the sum awarded on the claim on the group two patent?
You know, I'm not sure because I haven't gone back and looked at the time period over which they might have been using the repro. It might cover a different time. I just don't know the answer. I'm sorry.
Well, on Miani, I took your answer and I was trying to sort out whether you were saying either A, that there's a lot of material going the other way and therefore regardless of the actual statement made by the prosecuting attorney with regard to Miani, that statement is sort of overwhelmed by contrary evidence as to the scope of the patent and should be disregarded, even if it would in isolation be treated as a clear disclaimer. Or B, that there is an explanation for that statement that is consistent with a reading of the patent that is as broad as you submit it should be read.
Well, it's certainly B in the sense that...
Okay, what's the explanation then for the statement, the presently claimed composite is prepared by mixing the melted polymer and wood pulp forming pelletized material? Because that sounds to me, if you take that sentence, this is B now, if you take that sentence, it looks to me as if that's saying that composite equals pelletized.
You need to take that in the context of not even several office actions later, but in the same office action response that said, look, we are confronted with Miani and these other references. And here's the problem with those other references, and this is with respect to Miani as well. It's look at our modulus, look at the fact that we're a thermoplastic and not a thermosetting material, and we're going to make an amendment when confronted with this prior art, and we're going to add aspect ratio. That's what we're going to add. And we're covering a final product. When you get to this pelletizing issue, it's important to step back, especially with regard to the structural member patent, and keep in mind that we don't care what goes into the extruder. In fact, in the 334 patent, you know, there's a statement made on page 18 of the red brief that says, and I'm quoting, nowhere in the specification of any of the six patents is there any mention of making a structural part without the critical pelletizing step. Well, the 334 patent in the first column says you can direct extrude. Now, even though that's in the group one patents, it's important, one important fact to keep in mind. But going back to the group two patents in Miani, that the pelletizing, even if what Miani in fact did, and even if our preferred input into the extruder is a pellet, and it says that, that's our preferred input into the extruder. We're not talking about a process, a method, or what goes into the extruder. We're talking about what comes out of the extruder. It clearly says a structural member. It's what comes out at the end.
Well, but the sentence, again, bringing you back to that sentence, and this is B, can you read that sentence in a way that's consistent with your claim construction, is about how it's prepared. It uses the word is prepared by mixing. That's what you're saying, or the prosecuting attorney is saying, is our invention. So in terms of just looking, setting aside context, is there an explanation for that sentence that is an innocent explanation in the sense that it's consistent with the construction that you're urging for the Group 2 patents?
I think there are a couple explanations for that, Your Honor. One, there's no evidence, and the patent office never said, or conceded that Miani had the characteristics that were claimed. In other words, a structural member with these characteristics. And in pointing to how Miani made it...
But that doesn't matter, does it? I mean, our law, it seems to me, says the following. You tell me if this is not a fair characterization. You have a patent application to a shoe, and you are confronted with a prior art, and the examiner, well, never mind what the examiner, the examiner cites the prior art to you and says reject. And you say, well, you can't reject on the basis of that prior art because that prior art has leather soles. Our shoe has rubber soles. Once you say that, it doesn't matter whether the prior art has leather soles or not. What matters is you've said what your invention is.
But if,
and the question is this a characterization of your invention?
It is not a characterization of our invention that should be deemed a disclaimer, especially if you look at the very first thing we said about this prior art, page A4115, that says we disagree and have indicated in the specification that prior to our invention, previous PVC materials and wood did not have sufficient modulus. And then we go on to amend in light of that art by adding not some process limitation, not a form limitation, not an intermediate limitation, but a structural limitation of the size of the wood fiber that has to be. That's what we do in response to this art. That's how we view the art and how we view ours as being different.
Okay. Now, would you, are there other issues that you've not had a chance to address that you'd like to address? Because we will give you a little extra time if you're...
I guess I'd like to reserve it for rebuttal. I mean,
well, we'll give you your full rebuttal. I'm actually inviting you to if there's another issue.
Well, there is.
All right.
I'd like to talk about the anticipation issue briefly in this case, and the anticipation issue involves a modern plastics article. And the issue there, a couple different issues there. Number one, they claim that the modern plastic article...
That's actually, I guess that's a cross-appeal issue, right?
It is.
Yeah. Why don't you wait on that?
Because yeah, let me ask you then one quick question about the injunction question.
Yes, ma'am.
And that is, with respect to the court's denial of your injunction, why don't you have an adequate remedy in law?
If we have to, the benefit of the injunction, of course, is that if they start manufacturing the product again, that we have the benefit of a contempt hearing, as opposed to having to go in and file a new patent for injunction.
And this is something that they haven't done, that they stopped doing 6 years ago?
They stopped doing, and there's some indication in the record that we had thought that they were back in the claimed range, and you know they're kind of right at the edge, and so if they decide that they, for either financial benefit, because we think from an economic perspective, wood's a lot cheaper than PVC, and so they reduce their wood content below 30%, but at some point the economics of PVC, especially being a petroleum-based product, may be such that it's handy to throw another 5% wood in, which comes right back into our claims.
You know, you briefed this before the eBay case, so do you think that in any way changes things? It looked as if the judge looked at four factors, although very shorthand.
Well, that's an interesting point, Your Honor. The judge did, everybody briefed in post-trial the four-factor test, and so it covers what, I don't think eBay really has an impact on that, but the judge just kind of blew off the analysis and said, I really just don't think an injunction is appropriate here. It just never really did the kind of analysis that would be required.
But that's an interesting question. I mean, in eBay, they dealt with the factors you have to consider in terms of issuing an injunction. But here, the court decided to deny the injunction. Does the court have to analyze all four factors in terms of denying it? I mean, if the court finds one of those factors is deficient, why does the court have to reach the other factors in the context of a denial, not a granting?
That's probably a fair comment. I'm not sure, if you look at the record, that the court analyzed really any factor except she just kind of blew off the whole idea of the injunction. But
you mentioned the...
No, go ahead.
You mentioned the contempt versus new action, which of course is a concern I know is animates a lot of these disputes, but isn't that present in every injunction case? In every case in which an injunction is denied, you have that argument for why an injunction should have been granted. And if that were so, then we would have gotten eBay right for a different reason. I'm keenly aware that we've been told that we didn't.
I actually think that that on its facts, you probably got eBay right.
And well, you have nine people at least that disagree with you.
In any event, I think that if you look at the factors here, this is a situation where we are in fact operating under our patent. We may not be making deck ratings, but we're making a lot of product under our patent. We've licensed somebody else in the same area, Trex, under this. And I think it's important because we are practicing the patent that we've got a licensee out there who's been licensed under these patents that's in the same area, that we have the benefit of an injunction so we can bring a contempt motion if they come back in this claim.
Okay, very well. We'll reserve your full rebuttal time and you can address at that time any of the cross-appeal issues that may arise.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Skinion. Now, could you, Mr. Schwartzbauer, could you add the similar amount of time to Mr. Skinion's time? I think it's, what was it, about an extra 8 minutes or so, was it? Okay. All
right. Very well. Thank you. May I please the court? I think I can deal with that key claim construction issue from the point of view of both patents, or both groups of patents kind of together. Because the thing of it is that these patents came out of the same research project, the same invention, if you will. And what Anderson has proposed here for essentially both groups is what they call plain meaning. And essentially, the only thing plain about the meaning they propose is, number one, it wasn't what they invented. It's disclaimed in the specifications of both groups, and it was disclaimed in prosecution. What they invented, as is clear from what the inventor's testimony was at the trial, was that they got a polymer and wood extrusion that had better strength properties and thermal expansion properties than the prior art could get. And they put those values in most of the claims, those modulus value and the thermal expansion value. There's a minimum Young's modulus value in most of the claims. There's a maximum expansion, thermal expansion in most of the claims. And both sets of patents make it clear that they had only one way to get that. And it was a direct result of the process they used. And that was the pelletizing process, where they do a two-step operation. First, they prepare the pellets. And actually what happens is they say in their patents that you prepare the pellets, you orient the fibers, the wood fibers in the pellets, you control the moisture of the pellets, and then you cut the pellets from the linear extrudate that comes out of the die. And later on, what you do is you take those pellets, or the linear, solid linear extrudate, and you dump them in another hopper, and you extrude the actual structural membrane.
Is there any distinction between, for purposes of the process of obtaining the advantages of the patent, between pelletizing and simply linear extrusion before the chopping into the pellets?
There isn't any that's indicated in the patents themselves. And it would seem to me that probably it just deals with the ease of handling.
Okay,
the pellets are easier to handle than the longer spaghetti strings.
One of the problems that I encountered in thinking about the case is that you, in your brief, refer in a shorthand fashion to pelletizing, and you point to various places in which pelletizing is emphasized. And what became a little unclear to me is whether you meant every time you referred to pelletizing to include linear extrusion, as the term is used in
yes, because as a practical matter, the only difference in the process
is chop, chop, chop.
It is chopping up what comes out of the die.
Right.
And if you want to use,
but then that makes the references to pelletization a little less crisp, of course, because when in the prosecution history and so forth, it is said, well, you know, the key to our invention is pelletization, then you're really saying, well, they don't really quite mean that. They mean linear extrusion, which is sometimes results in pellets, right? Is that a fair characterization?
I think in part,
okay.
Judge. And what I would quarrel with is that when they were dealing, particularly in the Group 1 patents, for example, when they were dealing with just the composition, you have claims in individual patents directed to pellets, independent claims directed to pellets, linear extrudate, and then the composite material. This is, when they addressed that pelletizing comments, in that original set of prosecution history, they always referred to that globally. When they were talking about pelletizing, it was global. It referred to all three groups of claims. They never made a distinction between how they were using pelletizing in that prosecution history and between pellets, linear extrudate, and composite material in the claims.
That's all the Group 1.
All the Group 1 claims, yes, Your Honor. That's correct. So when they were arguing pelletizing here in the prosecution of the Group 1 claims, that's what they were arguing. It applied to all of them, because that's what they all, that's the only way that they could get those improved measurements that they rely on here, and Mr. Schutz referred to as being distinctions over the prior art.
Well, maybe your response was addressed the problem that I was having, but just to make sure, let me ask the question a different way. When you recite a statement made in the prior, well, this actually was in the prosecution history in response to prior art, the recited invention is a rosin and fiber composite thermoplastic pellet.
Yes.
You do not intend by that reference to argue that it excludes linear extrudate, as I understand it.
That's correct.
So the word pellet, we already know, doesn't quite mean in that context pellet. And
correct.
Pellet alone. So we've already broadened the word a little bit, and my question is, isn't that word then being used in less than a very precise, restrictive fashion in the prosecution history? You understand my question?
Yes, I do. Right. I think that's correct. Yes, it's to that extent.
So why do we limit to the linear extrudate as opposed to the composition without having pulled it out in a certain way and chopped it up in a certain way? Is pellet, in other words, can that be regarded as kind of a shorthand for the various forms in which this substance can be presented?
But only as a solid form. The commonality between linear extrudate and pellet is it's solid. What is different between what they accuse of infringement here, at least initially in the case, was the fact that we were dumping our composition is powdery polyvinyl chloride and sawdust, essentially. It's not a solid form. And so what they did in prosecution was, each time, and it's repeated throughout that Route 1 prosecution, each time that they were confronted with any type of rejection at all, they came back to, it's the pellet. That's consistent with the specification, which says, in the Route 1, it makes it absolutely clear, in order to get a structural part here, good structural part, pelletizing is required. And I think in that sense, the pelletizing, that's in the summary of the invention section, and the summary of the invention section saying it's required to use pelletization, and that means in terms of the linear extrudate could be used.
And that's all Group 1.
That's all Group 1. And so where we have it with that is, and what in the Group 1 claims, is to make it clear actually that they're talking about the composite claims as also being a solid, and the district court's construction of that being pellets or linear extrudates, is that in the Group 1 claims, in a lot of them, for the composite, they put in a Young's modulus value for the composite. And that can only be done measured with a solid. The patents themselves refer to the ASTM test, which is a test on a solid part. It's a tension modulus test. You cut the piece in half to stretch it.
Now, you've, understandably, I think Mr. Schutz talked initially of Group 2, and you have talked largely about Group 1. Why don't we focus on Group 2 to the exclusion of Group 1? And I had an exchange with Mr. Schutz about Miani, and I understand your argument about that. I am less certain about how far you go with the specification. I see that you do cite, well,
yes.
In the 553, you cite column 10, lines 30 through, looks like 48. But that doesn't seem to me to have the kind of force that some of the Group 1 statements, both in the specification and in the prosecution history, have. What's your strongest, is that the strongest piece of ammunition you have from the specification of Group 2's?
I think there are two things in the specification. I think one of the things in the specification is, at the beginning of the summary of the invention section, it again talks about how to obtain this.
This is the "we have found that the successful manufacturing physical properties passage."
Yes, requires the intimate. Instead of saying.
That's 553, A148, 553, column 2 at the bottom.
That sounds correct.
I think, I think that's the same passage. It shows up in the other patent, too.
There's a similar one in the 227.
Right. Same language.
Lines are just a little bit different.
Right.
But yes, that's right. What it says here is that it talks about, in terms of that, what's required to get this composite structural piece that can replace wood, it requires intimate mixing and intimate contact between the polymetric material and the fiber.
But there's no reference in that passage, as far as I could see, to pelletization,
no,
just mixing.
Just mixing.
So if you can mix without pelletizing, I mean, I know it, your position is that, that nobody told us how to do that, but at least for purposes of claim construction, this does not seem to confine the invention to pelletization.
By itself, perhaps not.
Okay.
The specification, now we know from the summary here, that this mixing is absolutely critical. The mixing step is absolutely critical.
Okay.
To obtain these results. And that's consistent with the Group 1 claims too, to reach, obtain the Young's modulus results they're talking about, just to take that as an example, because that's in most of the claims, in all of the claims, certainly the Group 2 that are asserted against us. They had to do this mixing of the polymer and the wood fiber as it's described here, intimate mixing. We talk about intimate mixing.
But it's not a method claim.
No,
so, so there are other pieces of this specification that make it look as if it's a replacement for example, wooden structural members. And it's a lot tougher for you through the specification here.
For the specification, but then tied in with the prosecution, and I'm going to do that in a second, it makes it
But if you think of the specification as a little bit more exalted,
yes.
It's a tougher case for you.
By itself, yes, because they don't make the statement in that summary that they're talking about pelletizing. But remembering this is still under the same inventive concept, the same invention, whereby, in this case, the only way, the only evidence that exists along the trial, that's in any of the briefs, that allowed them to make these Young modulus values of this ultimate part was by pelletizing first. That's an admission by their inventor at trial. It's consistent with the Group 1 claims. It's consistent with Group 2. And the reason it's consistent with Group 2 is because if intimate mixing is so critical to that part, what did they describe as the method for doing it in the Group 2 patterns? They described only one thing, and that's that same pelletization method. That's the only thing they describe. And then at the end, which is the portion of a specification you're referring to, which I think is a 10, mm-hmm. It attributes, in the Group 2 patents, it attributes these improved measurements, the improved Young's modulus measurements, to the pellet of the process here. So what we have here is then telling you in the summary of the invention, in order to get the proper structural part, which nobody in the art could do before, using a polymer and wood fiber extrusion, they couldn't do it, however they were extruding it. We say this intimate mixing where we arrange the wood fibers and orient them and control the moisture, that's critical to this, to getting these improved results. And the way they disclose in the patents is the pelletization, nothing else. There is not one bit of description any place in these patents that describe preparing these things any other way. So now when we're talking about, we go to the claims, and the claims on their face talk about, the actual key phrase at the beginning, I think, is a composite structural member suitable for use as a replacement for wood structural member. So it's a replacement part for something that is very strong, has a Young's modulus value of a minimum of 1.5 million PSI. That's what even the softest one. So they're looking to have that composite structural member replace wood. And they put in the claims the Young modulus value, right at the outset, that they only describe as being available from using a pelletizing process, in which in the specification they say, attribute the result to the pelletizing process, and at the beginning say, it's intimately mixed, and that's how they describe intimately mixing. In effect, is saying that whatever you were doing before to make this thing in prior art, you weren't intimately mixing it, and this is how you do it. So, on its face, the claim does not include a process step, But then in connection with, and I think the key part is that Miami part, well, not the only part in that specification, in the prosecution history, we're in the very first office action that they are confronted with. In the original application, that's the parent of the 553 and the 027 patent, in that very first one, they deal with Miami. And although they make other arguments, that argument actually says, he says, talking about Miami, furthermore, the composite is directly extruded and kept hot during the entire operation. That's how they construe Miami. And then he contrasts that by saying, this type of composite, which is the claim term, is not the composite taught by the present invention. In contrast, the presently claimed composite is prepared by mixing the melted polymer and wood pulp, forming pelletized material. There is not one method step in any of the claims that they are addressing that argument to. But they told the patent office what they really had invented here. And in so doing, they defined composite in those claims as certainly excluding any direct extrusion process, which is what fiber composites does, and limiting it to the pelletizing process. That's not the only time they do this. He says, later on in the prosecution of the next application, which is really the application that became the 553 patent, they added the word thermoplastic to the claims. It now becomes thermoplastic composite material. And what they did then was define, and when they added that, he says, the use of, and by saying the following, the use of thermoplastic plastic polymer.
This is at 4127?
Yes, correct, right, exactly what it is. The use of thermoplastic polyvinyl chloride and wood fiber in a composite pellet used in the thermoplastic process to form the structural member would result in a thermoplastic composite member. That's the term from the claim. Once again,
but doesn't I read that over, and you did feature it in your brief, and I see the point of the argument, but it didn't seem to me it has the kind of, it has an inclusive feel as opposed to an exclusive feel, and the exclusive feel is much more useful in assessing disclaimer, it seems to me. This is saying what is included, and the absence of any broader inclusion may be have some probative value, but it's not. Doesn't seem to me quite the same as saying this is what it's not.
That may be so, but the question, the larger question is, if the claims are as they say it is, why would you even make the statement? Why would that statement even be there? And the reason is that a lot of the art they were dealing with was had no pelletizing in it. So all of a sudden, now they're back at this time focusing on what their invention truly was, which was pelletization. That's what they thought they had invented.
Can I ask you this question, which it wasn't alluded to in the briefs, and perhaps it's not in the record, and if so, don't go there. Is there any indication in the record as to what your product does to achieve the kinds of properties that are touted for the patented product as you view it, limited to pelletization, without pelletization?
Not specifically,
okay.
Because originally our product, our process was something that was set up by another company who licensed the technology from it.
In any event, but
and so no, there is no specific reason. I don't know why.
That's fine. It's not in the record. It's not in the record.
I'm not sure we've moved on to infringement yet, but how do you deal with? Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's fine.
Suppose we went with the district court's claim construction on the Group 1 patents.
Yes.
Where in the record does it talk about, you claim that Anderson didn't put in enough evidence to show infringement by the repro. He says yes. Could you spell out your argument a little bit more?
Well, the argument is simply this. The only thing that they had tested for, because we're dealing with Young's modulus and coefficient of expansion, limitations in these claims, among other things. What their expert did was they bought some product of ours at a store, some product that we had sold, and they tested that.
The full member.
Yes, the
slats. The slats or whatever.
Yeah.
Or the post.
The post and the spindles and the top rails and bottom rails. And they tested that. And that's how he came to his conclusions as to what was in it and how the those modulus numbers looked. But that's not the repo. I think the repo picture is an actual, like it's not blown up. That's what it looks like in our brief. I think that is what it is.
Well, he claims that's circumstantial evidence and it's enough to meet the burden.
Well, where it comes from is a rejected part that they've never tested. And because this comes belatedly, they never asked to test. And essentially, in order to prove infringement of that, you would have to prove that the repro not only met that limitation, but was in fact did meet the claims, but was in fact met all the other limitations in the claims. Here.
So you're saying because it was a reject, you can't use it as circumstantial evidence.
You couldn't even tell what the percentage of the wood fiber content would be just on its face. I mean, you'd have to do testing on the repro itself, which they never did. And the reason that comes up is because they only thought of that later. I mean, originally, the Group 1 patents were our product, our ultimate product, was accused of the Group 1 patents, even though the claims clearly call for it, just the composition.
Well, I take it that the Young's modulus of, I mean, if I have, for example, a baseball bat, I can test the Young's modulus of the bat. If I chop it into 16 pieces, I can still test the Young's modulus of each of those pieces, and I will obtain, presumably, the same result, correct?
You should.
All right. I mean, assuming a consistent consistency throughout the bat. So the fact that these are all in chip form, and it looks like many, many tiny chips, but nonetheless, you could test the Young's modulus of each of these chips, right?
You could.
And you would assume, assuming that the product is thoroughly mixed, that you would achieve the same Young's modulus with respect to each chip that you would for the structural member that you started
would,
with.
You would think so, but then that deals with the question of why it was defective to begin with.
I mean, that's your argument, is that it was defective and therefore it might not have had the same properties.
Okay. But that's not my burden, that's their burden.
Can I ask you one quick final question on the injunction?
Yes.
I mean, the only thing I think the district court said was concluding that this is not a case where the equitable power of the court would be well served. Now, you go on in your brief to spend 8 pages or so dealing with each of the factors and analyzing those factors. But how are we to review the court's decision under abuse of discretion when there's no analysis or no detail on what the court's thinking was?
Well, I think the issue is abuse of discretion, and those are the factors that were presented to her and the evidence that was presented to her in connection with each one. In terms of review of that here, I realize it's difficult if the court doesn't say, well, the court doesn't say much, but essentially, when you deal with the four factors here, I think the net result is that any reasonable court would conclude that a permanent injunction here for some product that was stopped 6 years ago or 5 years ago at that time, for reasons of defects in it, is probably inappropriate to you. In fact, there's no harm to them. My time is over, and I don't want to go further rather than the extra time to go to the
Well, if there is something that you think is important for us to hear orally that is not perhaps adequately covered by the briefs, why don't you allude to it at least?
The only thing I would say on the injunction issue would be Mr. Schutz referred to his licensee and what they were doing, and there's no evidence of that in the record other than there is a licensee. And as a practical matter, injunction for the past stuff, for what we stopped selling as of 2000, it doesn't affect the market today. I mean, our current product still doesn't infringe because they abandoned their infringement chain claim against it. So nothing will change in the market.
And you're content to leave the cross-appeal issues to the briefs?
I believe so. Yes, because the anticipation is a contingent of the new.
I understand. Right. Very well. Now, any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Skinny. Now, Mr. Schutz, we will give you your full rebuttal time if you need it. You shouldn't feel obliged to use it, but if you need it, it's yours.
Couple of points, Your Honor. Back to trying to have a nutshell response to Miyagi and the spec. If you go right to the spec of the 027, it says unambiguously, more particularly, the invention relates to an improved structural member that can be used as a direct replacement for wood. So If someone wants to know what the invention of the structural member patents are, if you look to the claim, it says a structural member. They go to the spec, it says a structural member. If you look at the file history and beyond, what it really says is the presently claimed composite is prepared. In other words, we've got a process here, how you prepare it, and then what you have at the end. We claim what you have at the end. There's a key, and we've got this in the record. There's a lot of patents came out of these filings. We've got method patents. And we know how to write method patents and get method claims. That's not what this is. This is an end product claim. And we may put a pellet in the extruder to come out with an end product. They may put polyvinyl chloride powder and wood to the extruder to come out with that end product. But it's the end product that's claimed. And when you talk about the intimate mixing, that's critical to get the structural properties. And if you don't intimately mix, you're not going to get the structural properties. And if you look again, and I think that this is important, in the claims, after or in the spec, after we talk about making the pellet, then we simply go, and this is column 7 of the 027 patent, at A137, line 14. In a similar fashion, the pellet materials of the invention are introduced into an extruder and extruded into the structural member. So basically, you're taking the same process you use to extrude the pellet, and then you toss the pellet in and you extrude the structural member out of it. And Mr. Skenyon had it right when he said, yeah, you make a pellet because what you can do is easier to store a shelf life and put it on the side. And then when your time comes to make the structural member, instead of mixing some wood, mixing some powder, you toss in the pellets. Is what you do. And that's the only difference. So we have an end product claim. And I think it's clear on that. So that's enough said on that. Thank the court for that. On the repro, touching briefly on that issue to finish up here. The context, of course, is that we were SJ'd. There was summary judgment against us on that. Despite these facts, it is like a baseball bat chopped up. We tested product that you brought at the store. And sometime, and testimony that sometimes the product's defective when it comes out. It's not defective because it was tested not to have certain properties. There's nothing in the record about that. It's warped. Maybe the coloration isn't right. They toss it in a pile. They chop it up. And so then they take that chopped up stuff and they put it back in, just exactly like we do with the pellets here. And so the test, even though we didn't test the pellet, that's correct. We tested product that came off of their extruders. And there's testimony in the record that that product, sometimes defective, is chopped up, stored, and then tossed back in the extruder. So it's not a leap at all. It's circumstantial evidence that the intermediate does in fact have the same properties as this stuff that we tested. And that was our expert's opinion. But the court held no material issue of disputed fact there, and we think that was wrong. And I thank the court very much for the time it allotted me in the beginning. Thank you very much.
No further questions. We thank both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted.
Thank you.